And first bill up is 3121. Pat, do you want to give us a little rundown?
Sure, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3121 allows an authority to dispose of a vehicle with an appraised value of $500 or less at the request of a person who's in lawful possession of the vehicle. It allows a person holding a valid record certificate to tow and dispose of a vehicle appraised at $500 or less. It requires a person claiming a lien for the cost of removing, towing, or storage of a vehicle appraised at $500 or less to retain the vehicle for 15 days after the lien attaches before closing on the lien. Minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Patrick. Phil Steinbeck. Welcome, Phil.
Chair Gilman and committee, this bill comes to you from the Douglas County Board of Commissioners via Keith Kubik, the planning director, to Representative Morgan. We want to thank Representative Morgan and staff for her help so far in this process. The bill before you today addresses a land use violation code enforcement issue that we feel could be done in a simplified manner as outlined in House Bill 3121. The bill reduces transportation costs for removal of wrecked vehicles and eliminates owner notice requirements for wreckers upon the vehicle arriving at their location or business.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but could you state your name for the record also?
Yes, I'm Phil Steinbeck. I'm a senior planner with the Douglas County Planning Department. Sorry about that. I also would like to point out that what we're talking about today, I've attached a photograph of one of the items to the letter. Typically what you're looking at is something that, even though it's called a vehicle, oftentimes really isn't one, may not have a vehicle identification number, a VIN, and pretty much is a less than valuable piece of material. What you'll find is code enforcement in Douglas County has run across a few of these over the past couple years, and in some instances we have multiple pieces of vehicles like this on properties. We're talking to landowners who oftentimes didn't put that piece of material there, doesn't know who owned it. It's kind of a, you know, has owned a piece of property that vehicles were there when they bought it 20 years ago, and so there's this cleanup process that is followed in terms of when a code enforcement gets involved. At this point, it's two simple changes. If you put it in a nutshell, one gives local government the authority to fill out what is called a junk slip, which also requires notice to the Department of Motor Vehicles and some other things, but then also eliminates the requirements on the wrecker to help facilitate their business efforts in cleaning these situations up. The Douglas County Board of Commissioners requests the Transportation Committee's support of this bill, and as I mentioned earlier, would like to also thank Representative Morgan and her staff for their efforts.
Thanks, Phil. Questions?
Mr. Chair, yes. Just as an example, I'm using this picture. Is it possible to get the VIN number off this?
On occasion, they're still there.
But there's times that you may not.
There's times that we cannot.
And, Mr. Chair, the reason I ask that question is one of the things that's required here is that you have to have a VIN. And also, I want to remind members of the hearing we had the other day with the dismantlers. And their concerns about the chain of custody of vehicles and the parts as they cut them up and dismantle them. And I guess I'm just, I don't want to set up a situation with this bill that puts them in a difficult situation.
Okay.
I don't know what the answer to that is. That's probably more a comment than a question, but I think we need to be a little bit careful that we're not getting crosswise with some other legislation we're looking at as well.
All right.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Al? Al Wilkins.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins representing the Oregon Tow Truck Association today. the Oregon Tow Truck Association is in support of House Bill 3121, and we had the pleasure of working with Representative Susan Morgan's office during the interim to get this bill developed, and with Mr. Stenbeck as well. I brought two real people with me today, towers, that could answer any questions that you might have in relation to this bill, but we're here for both bills today. But we support the bill, and I think it's a good way to get a lot of the stuff that you see pictures of off of property very quickly. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Sure.
We're pulling up this. My previous question, are you familiar with the bill we looked at?
Yes, it was the auto record dismantlers bill. I'm familiar with the bill, the licensing bill. Yes, I am.
What the number was?
No, I have it in my file. I could look quickly for it if you would like.
Well, the reason, Mr. Chair, the reason I ask is if I remember correctly, when a dismantler takes possession, they need to have the VIN and title and all those types of things. In this bill, your folks may take possession of this and not have that information,
so
they might be in conflict with what this other bill would do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I'll call Mike and Gary up, and they can talk to you about the process. And I don't know. This is for vehicles under $500.
That might be the key.
So, you guys want to come up, Mr. Chair?
Come on up.
Can you explain to him what paperwork you guys give him when you take it to a record?
On the roll.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Gary Coe, Speeds Towing in Portland. We hold weekly auctions to dispose of unclaimed vehicles. And there are often a number of vehicles that there are no bids on, which go to auto wrecking yards. Most of them will have VINs, and we go through the possessor lien process, notifying the legal and registered owners. Some of them have no VINs available, and we just have to process a lien as unable to locate any legal or registered owner.
I'm looking to see if this other bill had a dollar limit value on it, which it seems to me it might have. But, Mr. Chair, I'll tell you what, instead of taking a good waste of time, I'll just look at this later.
Sure. Because we're not going to, and I just as well let you know, because we're a little short on members, we're just going to hear bills today. We're not going to move any bills. But I do want to have a full hearing because we're probably moving through pretty fast then this next week.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Anyone else to testify on 3121? Close the hearing on 3121 and open hearing on 3126. And Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3126 requires that a person transferring a vehicle to provide the Department of Transportation with the name and address of the person to whom the vehicle is being transferred. It modifies the offense of abandoning a vehicle and requires suspension of driving privileges for a person convicted of abandoning a vehicle for a minimum of 90 days and until the person pays the cost of removal, storage, and disposition of the vehicle. The bill sets a punishment at a minimum fine of $250, except in cases where the cost of removal, storage, and disposition of the vehicle has been paid, in which case the minimum punishment is set at $50. The bill requires that a person claiming a lien for cost of removing, towing, or storage of the vehicle appraised at $500 or less retain the vehicle for 15 days after the lien attaches for the foreclosing of the lien, which is language. That last part is identical to language in the previous bill.
Thank you. Kristen Mitchell and Mike Monroe.
Good
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kristen Mitchell. I'm generally here with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association today, but today I'm here to introduce Mike Monroe, who sits on the Umatilla County Solid Waste Advisory Committee, along with one of my members, Susan McHenry from Pendleton Sanitary Service, who would have liked to have been here, but she's hosting a number of Rotarians this weekend over in Pendleton. This bill, 3126, as I understand it, comes from similar issues that you find in 3121. In fact, the Umatilla County Solid Waste Advisory Committee sent a letter to Representative Jensen supporting the concepts that were in 3121, but they had some additional issues that I think weren't dealt with completely in 3121 that 3126 would take care of. A number of people met this morning with Representative Jensen. The DMV was there, State Farm, I believe insurance was in the room, Al Elkins and Mike Monroe, and I think that's the extent of it, to talk about the bill and see if there were, if what kind of condition it was in. We agreed there were some issues that probably need some revision, but we appreciate the opportunity to have Mike Monroe here today to talk to you about what the problem is and what 3126 is designed to have the solution. So, with further ado, Mike Monroe.
Welcome. Thank you, Chairman Gilman and committee members. My name is Mike Monroe. I'm a member of the Umatilla County Solid Waste Committee. And again, we're going to be talking about abandoned vehicles. Basically the same, some of the same issues that Douglas County's got. It's just we feel there's some more issues here than just that. Abandoned vehicles are not just off of private property. A lot of them come from the public highways through our police agencies, county sheriff's office, city police. And some of them come from our own, from the towing lots where vehicles are not picked back up or taken care of. So we feel that there's a bigger, broader picture here concerning abandoned vehicles. And some of the problems that we wanted to take care of was who was going to be responsible for the abandonment of a vehicle. And current language in Oregon law is a little bit on the vague side as to who's going to be held responsible for this. So we wanted to get some language changed that holds somebody responsible. And Representative Jensen's office has done, I think, a real good job in filling in some of the blanks there to get it to a point where we can put our finger on somebody. The second issue, which is probably one of the biggest, is the cost that's involved with dealing with some of these abandoned vehicles. And it's really a big picture. Some of these vehicles that are dealt with have all kinds of different issues, being environmental issues, drug issues, needles, you name it, hazardous materials, all kinds of different issues that help contribute to the expense of dealing with these things. We feel that somebody needs to be held responsible for the abandonment of a vehicle. Currently, the way it's being done and has been done for the last 20, 25, 30 years is the towing industry bears the brunt of the cost of dealing with this with little or no help through statute, other means to recoup their expenses back. The number of abandoned vehicles that are coming to light today is getting more and more, and it's to a point where I don't feel that the industry can carry the load anymore. It needs to be put back to the people who are abandoning these vehicles. So we need to come up with a way. We've got some problems, I understand, with the exact language in this at this point. We still need to work on it to how we're going to do this. But somehow we're going to have to do this without going through a conviction process, because law enforcement is... would have to issue a citation on this, and they won't do that. They've got other things to do more important than dealing with an abandoned vehicle. Currently, what happens is towers are on a rotation list through Oregon State Police, city agencies, county agencies. And part of being on that rotation list is they are required to pick up abandoned vehicles. And that puts the whole financial load on them. And if they don't pick up the abandoned vehicles, then they're yanked off the rotation list. I have a problem with that. I think that's extremely unfair to a small group of people to carry the load of what this costs to deal with these abandoned vehicles. So what we're trying to do here is get that cost. There's a couple of different avenues to go with it. I've read several articles. There's states all over the country right now that are dealing with this exact issue, and everybody's doing it slightly different. The thought is that it's not a small group's problem, like the tour industry or anybody else. It's everybody's problem. And if it's everybody's problem, then everybody needs to carry part of the expense of it, whether it comes through the general tax base or whatever, which that's not likely going to happen, and nobody's heading in that direction. So the other option is to get the responsibility back to the people that abandoned the vehicle. And somehow we've got to get the wording in there to where we can do that. Having a conviction and then punishing is fine, but it's impossible to get the conviction. There's three ways an abandoned vehicle comes about. One, either off of private property or off of the highways or from a tower. If it comes out of the towing lot where it hadn't been picked up, law enforcement's not going to get back involved with that and issue a citation. So this can go to court and be dealt with. If it's off of private property, in most cases, the law enforcement won't have anything to do with it. It becomes a land use problem, code enforcement, abatement, and no citation will be issued in that respect. So it leaves a lot of holes there as to just how we're going to do this. The next area that we tried to deal with was cleaning up some language on the lien process. If the vehicle came off of private property, the process of dealing with this is slightly different than if it comes off of a highway. And because of some loopholes in Chapter 87, it brings the process into a 30 to 60 day period of time before you can get rid of this abandoned vehicle. Well, if an authority has you pull the abandoned vehicle off the highway, it falls under Chapter 819.215, and it's a 15 day process. So there's a big expense involved whether you're dealing with it off of private property or off through an authority. So we tried to close the loophole there, which did that in this bill, plus the 3121 that opens the door where vehicles appraised under $500 can be disposed of in a 15-day period.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under, if you have a copy of the bill in front of you, on the bottom of page 2, the top of page 3, it talks about two different categories. One where there is a minimum fine of $250 in a case where the person pulls it and tries to do anything. They just abandon it. $250 fine. But then there's this other category. Help me understand. It looks like it's saying in a case where they have or they can demonstrate evidence that they did take care of all the costs of removal, storage, and disposition, then they still would have a fine of $50. And it looks like still would have the driving privileges suspended. Help me understand that.
Okay. The first part of the fine of $250 is a minimum fine, and that would be in a scenario, for example, if they showed up to court, they hadn't tried to take care of this thing, the tour had made notice that they've got the abandoned vehicle, he's made no effort, then the fine, he would have a fine of a minimum of $250. It could possibly be more the way I read this. If he shows up in court, and he had come in to the tower a week or 2 weeks after the vehicle was towed, took care of the tow bill on it, processed it, then showed up in front of the judge to take care of the ticket, there'd be a minimum of a $50 fine just for abandoning the vehicle in the first place, causing this to have to go through all this process. And then there would also be a mandatory minimum of a 90-day license suspension for abandoning the vehicle. The problem here with this is finding these people to deal with them to begin with. My thought is that their license needs to be suspended to get them to come in and deal with the situation to begin with right up front. There's some language problems with whether a conviction has to be done first, or we're working on trying to change that. But the problem basically revolves in you can't get somebody to deal with this through a conviction. You have to have a ticket issued and find the individual, and that's where the rub is. You can't find most of these people. So they're going to have to come to us to take care of the problem, and the only way they're going to do that is you got to take something away from them to get them to come in and deal with the problem of abandoning this vehicle.
Yeah. If I could follow up, and it may be more of a question for somebody from the agency who's going to be the one to interpret this in terms of enforcement. The language, the way it's worded in here, and I realize it's probably legislative council's wording, not yours. That's, right. That's the way this always works. But, I mean, I almost read it to say if someone is charged with abandoning a vehicle and they say, I didn't abandon that vehicle, I paid to take it to a dismantler, not a wrecker, once we pass the bill, and can demonstrate evidence that they did pay to remove it and deal with all of it. I'm reading this to say that they could still be potentially subject to a fine. It's not waiting until a conviction, that the conviction triggers the license suspension, but it looks like these fines can be assessed before they're even convicted of abandonment. So you may just want to take a look at that. And it's probably less a question for you than for whoever's going to be enforcing it.
Right. We're going to be looking at that, okay, that language in there and trying to fix that part of it. We know we have some problems there.
Representative Kirby, did you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand you correctly to say that you have problems getting convictions because law enforcement doesn't
exactly
have resources to deal with this?
I found out something interesting this morning in this meeting in Representative Jensen's office. DNV indicated that, I believe she said over the last year, that they've seen 41 convictions for abandoning a vehicle. So from their standpoint of view, they don't see that there's a problem. And there's a huge problem. So the gray area here is the citations aren't being issued. I own a towing company. It's not unusual
I'm
for...
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
I said I own a towing company.
Oh, thank you.
It's not unusual for us to tow 5 to 8 abandoned vehicles a day, at least a couple times a month. We average better than one abandoned vehicle a day. And I've never, in the 18 years I've been in business, seen a citation issued for an abandoned vehicle. Police aren't... Once they call us out to take the vehicle away, their problem's solved. And after that, they're not going to see it through any farther. They've got other priorities and other things to worry about other than an abandoned vehicle. It becomes a tourist problem at that point.
Okay, follow up. So then Section 7 almost becomes moot if we have to have a conviction. I mean, there's no teeth in it. If we're not getting convictions, there won't be any suspensions of driving privileges. So are you then suggesting that we delete the requirement for a conviction? And if so, what would be the triggering mechanism to suspend driving privileges?
I'm suggesting that once the wording is corrected under 819-100 and who's going to be held responsible, and we receive that information from DMV, who the responsible party is going to be, that we are able to support, send a record or a receipt to DMV stating that we're in possession of this vehicle, it has been abandoned, we were dispatched by whatever agency, or whether it came off a private property or it was abandoned on our own property. We have sent a certified letter to the owner showing that we have possession of this vehicle and what the fees are and they need to be taken care of. And that they have not, that at that point DMV flagged their license, suspend their license or their rights to register another motor vehicle in the state of Oregon until they come forward and deal with it.
So then if then the trigger becomes a notification or identification of the individual that's abandoned a vehicle under ORS 819-100. Is 819-100, the language that's in there now, satisfactory? Because your bill doesn't amend that section at all.
Yes, it does. In the first part of it, it does.
I stand corrected. I see that.
Currently, no, it does not. That's what we're trying to change, as to who is going to be held exactly responsible.
Okay, I see that. Okay. And I will look at that a little bit more closely. Thank you.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't really have a question so much as a comment, because I couldn't tell you whether this is the answer to the problem, but during the period of time I was on City Council, I can tell you this was an issue. And at that time, as naive as I was thinking, well, I mean, if nobody claims these vehicles, they get them, and there's a value there to them. So I have since come to the understanding that there really isn't much of a value to most of these vehicles, and it is a problem. And again, whether this is the answer or there's work to do on it, I can appreciate what the issue is.
Well, I'm not sure if this is the complete answer. It's a start, considering that we have changed no language concerning these vehicles in 25 years in this state, that it's just been walked around, and we need to start somewhere. I suspect that the next session we'll be back looking at making a few more changes, but we've got to start somewhere, and we've got to start making some changes to it, or we're going to have some serious problems. An example that I just read about recently happened in Philadelphia, where the abandoned vehicle problem just became so overwhelming to the towers, they quit towing them. They couldn't handle the volume. They collected and collected for a period of about 6 months. The city finally had to come in and hire every tower in the city of Philadelphia. It took them 72 hours to completely clean up that city for about $600,000+. So it can be an expensive problem. If we look at it and try to fix it now, there's going to be some expense involved. There could be expense involved at DMV, and I'm sure there will be. But we're going to have to figure a way to bear it and pass it back to the people that are responsible.
Thanks, Mike. I think that's all the questions.
Thank you.
Okay, Al, Gary, and other Mike. Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, Director of the Oregon Tow Truck Association. With me today are Mike Wagner, Chairman of our board, and Gary Cope, Chairman and past president of the Oregon Tow Truck Association. We're here in support of House Bill 3126. This is similar to bills that we've drafted in the past and worked on with committees, and we are sensitive to some of the wording problems within the bill, and we have agreed to offer any technical assistance to the work group to see if we can come up with better language. Mr. Monroe spoke about towers towing abandoned vehicles in Philadelphia. We've had that situation in Oregon, too, and we've adopted language and statutes two sessions ago in relation to Lincoln County, where they have a huge abandoned vehicle problem, and to the city of Roseburg, Douglas County, where they have a huge abandoned vehicle problem. So we have worked with the legislative body in trying to address this problem piece by piece. And a big part of this is law enforcement, OSP, and others. So we've all worked together to try to make this work. These gentlemen will be glad to answer any technical questions that you might have in relation to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions? Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The work group you referred to, again, that's who?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley. Representative Jensen suggested a work group to work on the language, and Kristen Mitchell is the lead person on that, so we're working through her. She got to the room first. She got to the meeting first today, so
she was one of those absent. That
yes.
Happens. Follow up, please. I guess what I'd like to ask is that the work group look at both 3121 and 3126, since there is some overlap on sections of code that they're modifying or amending, and maybe work this into one bill. And I'd also like you folks to take a look at that in light of 2429 that we had hearings on the other day, just to make sure we don't have a potential conflict there. Just to
Mr. Chair,
your judgment.
Yeah, Representative Burley would be happy to do that.
Thanks.
Okay.
And for the record, Representative Jensen came down to my office before this session and offered to work with that work group. So that was fine with me. So I think we're pretty well established.
Thank you.
We would like a product now.
Okay. Thank you.
What other questions? No. Robin Freeman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Robin Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation. I guess I'll start by saying I was part of the group that worked on this bill this morning. We had some discussion about this. So my testimony is to the bill. So I'm pointing out to you today in my written testimony and in front of you some of the problems that we saw or the concerns that we see that we'd like to resolve. But the indications are through the work group that folks are willing to look at this language and bring you a different product. With that, current law requires that the seller of a motor vehicle today provide certain information to the department upon transfer of a vehicle to a new owner. This notification protects the seller from future claims of liability. If a vehicle is abandoned, the owner is responsible for the costs associated with its removal and disposition. The person who removed, towed, or stored the vehicle may attach a lien to the property and foreclose upon it should the owner fail to pay the costs. The impact to DMV by this bill are the following items that we've identified. The bill requires the department to suspend the driving privileges of an individual convicted of abandoning a vehicle for at least 90 days and will continue until the person provides satisfactory evidence to the department that they paid all costs associated with the removal, storage, and disposition of the abandoned vehicle. Currently, abandoning a vehicle may only result in a Class B violation, traffic violation. This bill requires that an individual remove their vehicle within 24 hours or they will be cited for abandoning a vehicle and liable for the costs of removal, storage, and disposition of the vehicle. There are approximately 55 citations issued annually to owners of abandoned vehicles. And when the gentleman that preceded me mentioned 41 convictions for abandonment, that was in 2004. DMV was aware of 41 convictions. And the year before that, 2003, I believe there were 69. We averaged it and came up with 55. An individual reinstating their driving privileges must pay a $50 fee to DMV in addition to the standard $75 requirement for all reinstatements. This bill does not specify the type of documentation that will be provided to DMV as proof that costs associated with the abandonment have been paid. Programming will be required to create a new suspension and capture the new $50 fee required for reinstatement. So, in summary, the primary impact to the department of this bill would be the new suspension of an individual's driving privileges when convicted of abandoning a vehicle. While convictions for this offense occur infrequently today, the department will be required to devote a significant number of hours and expense to program the changes necessary for implementation as the bill is today. Thank you.
Thank you. Question? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mm-hmm.
Robin, how are you today? A couple of questions. First, are there instances right now in the law that a person's driving privileges can be suspended without conviction?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, I knew you would ask this question today. I have a call-in to DMV. I'm getting better at this. We do. We have administrative suspensions, and then we have suspensions that result from the courts or from a conviction. And I've already asked the question on your behalf of DMV whether or not what the boundaries are for administrative suspensions. So if I may, I'll get back to you if that is your question today.
I think we were just trying to look for some consistency or rationale here for this. I'd be happy to look at that when you get it. Next question. So if the way this is worded now, and if you, at a minimum, you're going to have to pay $50 for the violation itself, then you'd have to pay $50 to get your driving privileges back, plus the existing current $75 for reinstatement of a license. So you're looking at $175 to do this minimum, right? Am I doing the math right? Mm-hmm.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, I believe so. We do have some, with the language that you talked about, and I believe you're talking about Section 5, Sub 4, we're not sure, but I believe that the courts will be collecting the $250 as a minimum fine. So, yes, that would be a minimum. We would not be, I believe, collecting that, but, yes, I believe your math is correct.
Okay, so the fine would be collected by the courts.
That's
so in Section 7, though, the fee of $50, which is new, plus the existing $75 to reinstate privileges, that is what DMV would collect.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, that's our understanding in our reading of this, yes.
Okay, and then in your written testimony, in the last bullet statement, the last sentence, you said that programming will be required to create a new suspension and capture the new $50 fee. If you didn't have the new $50 fee, would you still have to reprogram just to deal with the new suspension?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, yes, we would. But it would be significantly less programming. About half, I believe, in that neighborhood.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like one of the real problems is the lack of citations issued in stage one before we ever get to the place where they're even potentially convicted. Do you have any thoughts about how to either use existing fees or use these new fees or add on some additional fees that may go to those law enforcement agencies to help incentivize more citations? There's clearly some gap between the problem and getting the citations issued. I don't know if part of that gap is there's just no incentive. It takes time to issue a citation, it takes paperwork, and then none of the dollars from that fee flow to the agency that may be issuing the citation. Any thoughts on that?
Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, I think the work group is going to be able to address those things, and I think law enforcement needs to come in and talk to the group as a whole. I do think that one of the problems that I recognize here is that these are not individuals that are easily found, and so if we find them, will they still pay? Will they drive anyway? We've talked about that before in front of this committee, so I think there's a lot of issues for the group to talk about.
This is a little bit of a concern of mine. Mm-hmm. They've abandoned this vehicle that's not worth, and it's going to cost them more to get rid of it than it's worth. Do they really have any money? Are we going to be able to get anything out of it?
Well, and I would submit that maybe they don't care if their driving privileges are suspended. I mean, if I may, Mr. Chair, I mean, I agree absolutely this is a serious problem, and I appreciate folks bringing this forward, but I hope by these questions and whatnot, we're trying to figure out how we can frame this thing so it's workable and really has some teeth in it that can be enforced.
And Chair Gilman, if I might add, I don't mean to minimize the problem that they're having. We realize that it is a problem.
Yeah. Don't at all think that my comments mean that it's not a big problem. I understand right. It's a problem. I'm just not sure any of these ideas have gotten really to the crux of the problem yet. Maybe we need to make junk cars worth more or something.
Are you proposing an amendment to the bill, sir?
Okay. Thank you very much, brother. And Phil, you'd like to come up and take a shot at this one too, wouldn't you?
Phil Stenbeck, Senior Planner with the Douglas County Planning Department. I also attended the meeting this morning at Representative Jensen's office, and I'm hearing some things here. I just wanted to clarify just a few points. Coming out of the meeting, there seemed to be a general consensus that HB 3121 was fairly clean and could possibly move forward on a separate track, and that the group was to work on 3126 and maybe possibly at a later date somehow merge the two. The complexity of 3126 is substantially greater. It deals with a whole bunch of more issues, and typically 3121 deals with a vehicle assessed at less than $500, which is basically a piece of junk, whereas 3126 deals with the whole range. There's tiers in terms of values and liens and what wreckers and folks work with. There's a $500 threshold, and then $500 to $1,000 and above $1,000. And so I was going to just suggest maybe supporting working on 3126 separate from 3121.
Thank you.
Question? Oh, yes.
Just a comment. When I traded in my 11-year-old Audi with 325,000 miles on it, still running, I was only offered $300 for it.
Okay. All right.
It was a great car. Okay. Just a comment.
Anyone else testify on 3126? Close the hearing on 3126. Open a hearing on 3261. A little summary, Patrick.
Yes, Mr. Chair, House Bill 3261 prohibits the Department of Transportation from requiring a person convicted of driving uninsured to file proof of compliance with future responsibility requirements if the person provides proof to the department that the person was in compliance at the time of the violation. I noticed nobody has signed up to testify on this. I spoke to Representative Krupp's office earlier today. His office has submitted testimony on his behalf. He is out of the state at this time. He also indicated that the requester of the bill, who is a Mr. Don Benson, was planning to be at the committee hearing today, although it appears that he may not be. Okay. But we have his testimony and his amendments.
Perfect. And anyone else to testify on 3261? Close the hearing on 3261. Open the hearing on 3384. Same fire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. my name is Representative Carrie Beyer, and I represent District 12, Springfield. Today I want to thank you for allowing us a public hearing on this bill. This issue was brought to me actually last session and had some discussions on it, but we didn't go anywhere with it. One of my constituents is a driving instructor who had some concerns with the department and how they were handling the driver education program. At the time, he brought a notebook in that's the size of Representative Hunt's that he has in front of him, and with concerns about the program and the changes that were continually being made. This session, they were back with a second notebook, the same size, and more concerns with the fact that no consistency, the program kept changing on them. And this was passed as part of the graduated driver's licensing program in 99. They have an advisory committee now, and for it's not what I would say a very functional committee, partly because of problems with the department, partly because of problems among themselves and agreeing on things. And that at one point, and I think this has stopped at this point, but the head of the driver education program was acting as chair of the committee and breaking ties in votes at that time. So you can kind of get an idea of how dysfunctional it is. And so they had a number of suggestions. This one is the one we did bring forward to have the discussion on. And so I am going to go ahead and let these people come up and kind of explain what their concerns are and what's going on and why they would like this bill. And with that, I will return to my chair, and you can call the...
Thank you, Representative. Any questions?
No.
All right. Sandra Bishop.
Is it okay if we come on?
Of course.
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to address the committee today. I can, you'll be blissfully happy to know I can skip a lot of what I was going to say because Representative Beyer has already elucidated it. But I just want to start out by saying that, for the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I'm representing the Driving School Association of Oregon. And with me today is Mr. Rick Ubell, who's president of that association, and also George Stoddington, who is the treasurer, and both owners of commercial driving schools. The bill before you today would actually take a poorly functioning existing committee and actually turn it into what we hope would be a fully functioning standard advisory committee within the Department of Department of Transportation, and specifically within the Transportation Safety Division. We today are only referring to the -1 amendments, not the actual bill. And I apologize to those on the committee who I didn't have a chance to discuss this with. It just came out yesterday afternoon. So this is not your traditional gut and stuff, in that we didn't go find a vehicle and Shanghai. What we did is we put some placeholding material into Ledge Council early in the session as we worked out the details for the amendment. So it's actually an amendment to our own bill. But it was deemed easier to read if it was in one block rather than pieces in the original bill. So it's the -1 amendments that we're here to support today. To give you a little bit of a brief background on this, as Representative Beyer said, the whole reason we are here today is the graduated driving license program that was passed in the 1999 legislature. This was something that was put through with great support from then Representative Bob Montgomery, and he fully supports what we're doing here today, but he unfortunately couldn't be here today. I think he may have contacted the chair or other members of the committee. So if we have another hearing, we'll see if we can get him here or get him on the phone. Basically, the GDL, or the Graduated Driver Licensing Program, passed in 1999, and it went into effect in the year 2000. And to skip to the heart of the matter here, here we are, 6 years later, we do not have a stable program in place to support that graduated driver's licensing, and that program is the driver education program for the state of Oregon. And so, as Representative Beyer talked about, there have been so many constant changes, and today, if you ask the Transportation Safety Division for a written copy of their procedures, they don't have them. They have nothing in the way of written policy. They have a very informal structure by which they are putting into place a curriculum to train the trainers who then train the driver's ed instructors. We have also, to date, one of the problems that has come out is that it's not been possible to get the basic data and statistics about whether the driver's ed program is working in the state. If you ask how many people have been trained, and this is highly subsidized, you're subsidized through some of this training, so Rick and George have both been trained as what we call master trainers, so they can go out and then train the driving instructors. It seems a simple matter to get the data on how many people have been trained as trainers, how many people have they trained, and how many actual teen drivers are being given instruction. The whole bottom line here is safe teen drivers on the road, and so we're trying to get there through this process. So I don't know, I don't think you need it, but if it's necessary, I'd be glad to go through some of the main sections in the amendment. I think that the main heart of it is on page 2 of the -1s. This is under line, starting at line 10, it talks about the committee may And then advise and confer with the department on matters pertaining to the establishment of rules necessary to create and administer the courses in traffic safety education, which is the driver's ed program. And then section B, subsection B on line 15, review and approve any changes to existing instructor and curriculum standards. So what you have now is a... It's Friday afternoon. I'm not going to choose my words very carefully. You have a loosey-goosey kind of a informal advisory group. And these are very top-level professionals, driver and instructor people from throughout the state. You've got public providers from public schools, and you've got commercial folks from the professional driver instructors from the commercial schools. They are really not being treated in a respectful manner. This committee is being used by the staff mainly as a way to get information out, and they already have to go to weekend training. So it was just a training last night for 4 or 5 hours. So these advisory committee meetings are actually being used for purposes other than allowing the professionals, the citizens who are coming in on their own time. They're losing their income. The public school folks have to pay for a substitute, plan all their lessons and everything ahead so they can come from all over the state to these meetings. So what we're trying to do is just elevate this to a more workable situation in this kind of advisory group. And I've never really seen an advisory group at this informal a level, so we're trying to standardize that. One disclaimer I want to put in on line 19 of page 2, it says, work toward making traffic safety education programs available to all drivers in Oregon who are under 18 years of age. That is stated very correctly, but that does not indicate support for mandatory driver's education in Oregon. That is something that really has to be debated at the legislative level in the future. Right now, the programs in place do not lead us to believe that it's right to mandate that. I think I'll skip to how the committee set up. On page 3, one of the most important provisions in this bill has its section 9, line 6, section 9. The committee shall elect one of its voting members to serve as chairperson. This committee was set up in the spring of 2003 with the Transportation Safety Division staff person, who's the program manager for driver's ed, as the chair of the committee. And as Representative Byers said, that person actually, they continue to serve as chair of the committee. They also are a voting member. And so it's rather odd when you have professionals trying to discuss the issues and then you have a staff person who is supposed to be part of the organization that's being advised coming in and breaking ties on votes, voting in the first place, but then breaking ties is really beyond the pale here. So the Transportation Safety Division Administrator or Director has assured us over more than a year or so that that would change. It has not changed. Part of the reason that we're imposing this on you is that we can get no movement from this bureaucracy. It's really a matter of trying to get some efficiency out there to look at the long term or what the original goal is, which is safe drivers. And we seem to be really bogged down in a lot of overregulation of a program that should be pretty straightforward, not simple, but straightforward. And, you know, our folks have no issue with new material being brought in, but there's nothing in writing, there's no regulations, the communications are really fuzzy. There are no job descriptions for the individuals who are coordinating part of the program. So there's a lot of questions about how it's done. So we're hoping that one small step forward would be to put this together as a standard advisory group and then allow the actual issues to be discussed. I think that I will just give you a couple points over issues that will probably be brought up by the Transportation Safety Division. What I'd like to say up front is there should be no fiscal impact on this bill. According to the literature from 2003 when the committee was formed, it was to be funded with less than $4,000 a year. There's really not a lot of difference between the staffing or any difference between the staffing. Legislative Council chose, unbeknownst to us, to write into the amendment that you needed a full-time staff person. This does not require a full-time staff person. It simply requires some sort of staff assistance at a meeting for about 4 hours every other month, and to keep the minutes, and basically that's the extent of the staff support. So there should be no fiscal, because that's already being done for the existing committee. There's another kind of a technical problem that may be brought up by the administrator of the Transportation Safety Division, and that is that we are asking that this, the Driver Education Advisory Committee, advise the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee. Now, technically, it's a little odd. Technically, we're asking an advisory group to advise another advisory group. We're more than willing to have that changed so that we have this advisory group directly reporting to the Oregon Transportation Commission, if that is the proper way to do it in the statutes. The reason that we wrote it this way, had Leds Council write it this way, is that every time we have gone to the administrator of the division with any kind of an issue, he has said, I take my marching orders from the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee. So playing off of that, we're assuming if that's true, then we need to be advising them. And in the original documents inviting members to come forward and volunteer and then be appointed to participate in the Driver Education Advisory Committee, it says the authority is as recommended by the Department of Transportation Safety Division and the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee. So we've always thought that there needs to be more clarity on who these folks are actually advising. Let me just see if there's any points I haven't hit. That's really the crux of it. And then you'll hear from George and from Rick first, and then we'll be glad to answer any questions at the end. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandra Birch.
Thank you, Chair Gilman, members of the committee. I thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Richard Ubell. I'm a commercial driving school owner and have been providing driver training services in Eugene Springfield for the past 27 years. I currently serve as the president of the Driving School Association of Oregon. We're a small trade association with members representing half of the 26 commercial driving schools in the state. Since the passage of the graduated driver license law in 1999, Driving School Association members have been involved in efforts to improve driver education in Oregon. Some of our members served on the original task forces to implement the graduated driver license program in Oregon. DSA members continue to put in many hours of volunteer time on the Driver Education Advisory Committee. Driving School Association of Oregon supports House Bill 3384 as amended, -1. As representatives of commercial driving schools that teach many of our young Oregonians to drive safely on Oregon highways, we are asking to have the existing Driver Education Advisory Committee put into statute with members appointed by the governor. There is a need to restructure this group. We need to allow the Driver Education Advisory Committee to assist Transportation Safety Division Driver Education Program Management in establishing and maintaining a reasonable, practical, fiscally responsible, yet quality driver education program for beginning teen drivers in Oregon. Both commercial driving schools and public school providers of teen driver education programs need your help in moderating some of the burdensome regulations being imposed on us by the Transportation Safety Division as they pertain to Oregon's graduated driver license program. Legislators from previous sessions have repeatedly directed Traffic Safety Division staff to collaborate with the driver ed providers regarding policies and procedures for meeting the graduated driver license program requirements. And the Transportation Safety Director and staff agree that this is one of the express purposes of the Driver Ed Advisory Committee, but TSD has failed to follow through totally on this commitment. A stated goal of Transportation Safety Division is to establish a model statewide driver education program, a model for the nation, actually. How are Transportation Safety Division's desire to mandate a one-size-fits-all program for all providers is quite restrictive and has taken the driver education program in Oregon for kind of a wild ride. Transportation Safety Division seems more interested in establishing a nationally recognized model driver education program than in promoting an effective and realistic driver ed program that can reach the greatest number of teen drivers in Oregon. Recent Transportation Safety Division statistics gathered since implementation of the graduated driver license program in March of 2000 indicate that Oregon teens who took an approved driver education course as part of the graduated driver license requirement showed lower rates of convictions, suspensions, and crashes than students who had 100 hours of supervised driving practice with a licensed driver. It is interesting to note that much of this data was collected on students who took driver education before the new driver ed instructor and curriculum standards were in place. It certainly implies that some driver education is better than none. Unfortunately, there is no current scientific data that proves the efficacy and safety benefits of any specific driver ed program. The model statewide program approved approach being driven by Transportation Safety Division is being implemented on an experimental basis in the hope that it will prove to be effective in reducing teen crashes. Meanwhile, the graduated driver license driver ed program is becoming more and more overregulated by Transportation Safety Division. This has resulted in increase in cost of programs. A number of regulations and program standards are so inflexible and burdensome that some of the driver ed providers simply will not be able to comply, further reducing the availability of programs to young beginning drivers, the ones who need it most. House Bill 3384 is needed in order to assure that driver education providers are allowed to engage fully in the issues and focus on coming up with solutions to some of the problems. As it stands today, the Driver Education Advisory Committee is not being used to consider and discuss the foremost issues in the provision of driver education in Oregon. There's an ongoing need for driver education providers to review proposed regulations and work cooperatively with Transportation Safety Division before any additional regulations are put into place. Restructuring the Driver Education Advisory Committee will allow the Department of Transportation and the state of Oregon as a whole to take advantage of the countless years of professional experience of members of the Driver Ed Advisory Committee. The Driver Ed Advisory Committee currently has a very good balance of diverse, highly motivated, knowledgeable, and dedicated professionals from commercial driving schools, as well as driver education providers from high schools and community college. We are willing to serve. Please let us. Please support House Bill 3384 and direct ODOT Transportation Safety Division staff to reconstitute the Driver Ed Advisory Committee as a standard, fully empowered advisory group. This legislation is needed to codify Driver Education Advisory Committee that can assist Transportation Safety Division Driver Education Program Management in establishing a reasonable driver ed program and making it available to an ever-increasing number of teen drivers in Oregon. Thank you for your interest and your time to hear our concerns.
Thank you, Richard. George?
I'm George Doddington, president of Oregon Driver Training Institute. We contract with school districts to provide the driver education programs in Salem, Kaiser, and Eugene Springfield area. I think it was 4 years ago, or two sessions ago, the House Transportation Committee charged the department with forming a task force to review issues that were brought forth about the instructor training standards and implementation of those standards, and I was a member of that task force. And Mark Koberstein, who is the current chairman of the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, was the chairman of that task force at the time, and it was his proposal to form a driver education advisory committee to address these issues that, well, are basically still on the table, and it's going to be an ongoing process. A driver education advisory committee is just a critical element to the to having a successful driver education program in the state of Oregon, to review all changes and establish a standardized program that works for all providers throughout the state. And currently, There's changes going on in the curriculum. Every other month there's something new being added, and not one of these changes has ever been reviewed by the current advisory committee as to its value or you know, need. And I really believe that a lot of this stuff needs to be run by an advisory committee to assess the impact it's going to have on the providers and whether it's really worthy of being installed into the program itself. We got declining numbers in students right now. It's gone from 4 years ago, there was 14,000 kids that were that went through the reimbursement program. Currently, it's down to 10,000. There was 120 providers 4 years ago. Now there's 100. You know, we're going downhill fast as far as the program goes. We're reaching less kids than we were 4 years ago. You know, I think these are just indicators that this is not a successful program in its current state and needs to be reviewed and needs to have a committee that can, you know, really look at the issues that are creating this problem. And I just fully support a revamp of the committee itself. I think that it's been put together with the right people, but it's not addressing the right issues. We've got a department manager that's setting the agenda and running their agenda, and they have not looked at the recommendations from the task force fully that created the committee to begin with. As soon as it was formed, they picked their own issues to discuss. They never even itemized out the recommendations that were made by the initial task force. And, you know, there's still some of those recommendations made by the original task force that have not been addressed by this committee. So it needs to be worked on and you know, made into a viable program to help us get a workable system in the state.
Thank you. Questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you, panel. I appreciate it.
We must have done a thorough job or put you all to sleep. I made them promise not to use abbreviations, so we did pretty well. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Thank you.
Frank West.
Frank West, I know that I'm speaking just on my own behalf, but I'm on the other side of the issue from what I'm hearing today. I'm a representative of the community college. I teach for Chemeketa Community College. I also run a public school program out of Cascade High School. I think that the program that we are working with in driver education, just from my own view of it, having been right in the thick of it for the past 15 years, is that we have made a fantastic turnaround in this state. I'm bothered by those numbers that I just heard George giving you. Not that I question them, but I think we do have something going on there. I think it may have more to do with cost than anything else, but... And I know it's expensive, especially for the private companies putting on their program. And that's been kind of hard on numbers. There are some inaccuracies that have been given, and you've been given a very one-sided picture. I'm sorry to have to say that. From the side of a teacher in the public school and the community college, I am very supportive of what is coming down in the area, the whole area of traffic safety, and I'm very supportive of the leadership that we've been given. I have to tell you, just very honestly, that where we were before the implementation and the passage of the graduated driver licensing and the kind of support that was being given to driver education in this state was nothing in comparison to what is happening now. we are getting support, we are getting materials, we're getting ideas, we're getting training. None of that was there. And I don't mean to be negative, but you're hearing from a small group of private providers that are doing a very valuable service and are very much a part of the program in driver education. But I think that because they have not been able to get things to go as much the way they wanted or needed them to go in respect to their bottom line, because this training is expensive, and as they alluded to, in some ways perhaps burdensome to try to get everybody going down the same path and providing the same kinds of training. And that has been the goal of all of this. I think that it's just an effort to want to circumvent and go around and say, well, we couldn't get things to happen this way. Let's set up another committee here that's, and maybe we can make it happen this way. And I can't blame them for trying. I just think that in all honesty, we have to call it what it is. I guess I could be specific, but I don't think that's necessary. I'm not aware of any support from the public school side throughout the state or the community college side, high schools or community college, for the setting up or establishing of this advisory committee. I just have not heard any that think that this is something that would move us down the road any further or help us in the whole driver ed program in the state.
Thank you very much. For any questions, Representative Byer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly appreciate you being here to give your side. I guess I have a couple of questions, if you'll indulge me. The first one is, do you sit on the advisory committee?
No, I don't.
Okay. And do you see any negatives to actually having this group formed in statute? I mean, I can understand that you think there's an ulterior motive behind doing it, but I guess the question is, you think it would do more harm than good to actually have this group?
At this point, I suspect it might. I think the idea, I don't know enough about what it would accomplish to say that it could not be effective and do some good. I don't know that. My feeling about it at this point is that it's an end run, and that's its objective, and I see it as another layer that I don't know is going to help get things done.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair. If there were to be an advisory committee like this, you may not have had much chance to read the full bill, but does the composition of it, as outlined here, three public school instructors, three community college instructors, three private school instructors, and two parents of young drivers, does that composition make
sense? It sounds good. Yeah. That part sounds good.
In terms of the tasks of a committee as outlined here, if there were to be a committee like this, the tasks, I don't know, you may not have had a chance to review the tasks assigned them. Those tasks look like what would be appropriate if there were to be an advisory committee? Would you add or take anything away?
At this point, I don't know that I understand well enough the direction that it would take to answer that.
Correct.
Well.
Good question. Thanks again.
Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Testimony. And Troy, I guess it's your turn. You've been back there writing notes. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I am manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And my office is the place where the driver education program for the state of Oregon, the responsibility for that program resides. If I can do a little bit of history as well as what's been presented earlier, I do fully and respectfully will say that I disagree with some of the characterizations and the way some of it's been outlined. So if you give me just a minute to go back and give you a little bit of the history. It was the 1999 House Transportation Committee that had a bill before it dealing with the teen driver licensing process, taking Oregon to the next generation of a provisional license process. Then Chair Bob Montgomery was looking for a way to put an incentive in the program for teenagers to take a formal driver training program, because in this state it is not mandatory, and at the time was not wanting to make it mandatory. So in redoing the research in our office, and me specifically was involved with him in helping craft what that language looked like, came up with the fact of 50 hours of minimum driving experience under the permit, usually with a parent, and then either taking a formal driver training course that was at that point in time to be created by the Department of Education, or an additional 50 hours with a licensed driver like the parent. When the bill reached the Senate, Senate Transportation Committee and the chair at that time, Marilyn Shannon, was not enamored with the way the driver education program was running in the state. There had not been any type of training given to those individuals out there teaching children for over 20 years. And what training had been available was strictly a six-hour training program on how to operate a vehicle. Not on the concepts, not on trying to get kid-centered learning, how the kids learn between the differences. And in this one of these hearing rooms, when the bill was in front of that committee, was in the back of the room listening to the debate, and out of the blue came an amendment by the driving school association of the time to move the program responsibility from the Department of Education to the ODOT safety office. I wasn't aware of the amendment until meeting time. She called me forward in work session, said, "Are you ready to take over responsibility for this program?" And my comment then initially was, as long as there are standards on instructors, on the behind-the-wheel curriculum, the classroom curriculum, and the way the financing works, we should be able to move ahead. That's what's lacking. There's no training, there's no support, there's no standardization around the state at the time. Death rate and injury rate and crash rate for our kids in 1998-1999 was deplorable, was horrible, one of the worst in the U.S. And when asked again, though, she mentioned, "No, it's not what I asked you. Are you ready to take responsibility?" She amended the bill and shifted it. In March of 2000, it became part of the Safety Division of ODOT. In the bill and in law today, it says, through the governor-appointed Traffic Safety Committee, we are to establish standards on curriculum, behind the wheel, instructors, and finance. When I had responsibility for that, I had no staff. It was me as the manager of this office for the first 6 months to try and get this done. I had to come back to E-Board because the bill was passed through without any ways and means referral, no money, and no staff. There's no way I could do it. So I asked and had over 100 people involved in task forces that was mentioned, and the Traffic Safety Committee volunteered to chair those four task forces to set things in motion to get going. And the initial set of rules was a shell about where we want to head on these different aspects. I also recognize, because in statute for the teen licensing process, the commercial drive schools were not allowed to have a class that would be used for that student to go to DMV to get their license. It had to be through public school only, high school, educational service district, or community college. The private school allowance only could be there if they were a contractor underneath one of the public. So I came back in and proposed it and came into the 2001 session, the allowance for that fourth leg to be there, because there is a gap that needs to be filled across the state for doing driver training. At the same time during that, we went from task forces to an advisory committee. Attached to my testimony is the guidelines for how the advisory committee is to be made up and how it is to operate. And to come back to one of the points made, yes, my staff person in my office chairs that committee. And the reason why that person has chaired the committee during the first 2 years of its operation is because there were four very disparate groups that teach the courses, teach them differently, and don't agree. To have one of theirs come up, one of the nine people come up as a chair in the initial, I felt my call. But I felt that that would be the wrong place. I'm going to put somebody there that's going to get undercut, it's going to get fired at, and they're not going to want to be on the committee or be chair. So for the first startup of getting things going, I put my staff person in that role to take the heat, to deal with all the arguments, to deal with all the research and set any agenda for this group to go forward. This year, this spring, is the last time when I committed to say that he would get going for the first couple years until the group could start to form and gel and somebody from amongst that group could step up and lead and be chair. Is that a good call or a bad call? That's everybody will look at that and make it and have a different opinion. What we've also put in place, as was testified before you, is a set of resources and a set of training. For the subsidy side, for kids taking classes around the state, there is a built-in subsidy that goes to help lower the cost for the parents and for the schools to provide it. When this program was in the Department of Education, schools were typically getting 60 cents on the dollar when they were asking for reimbursement. Since the ODOT Safety Division has taken over this program, it has been dollar for dollar. And in fact, House Bill 2112 is before the legislature this session to raise the amount of money that we give back as underwriting the expense of a child getting a driver education course up to $210. House Education Committee approved that, and it's now sitting as part of ODOT's Ways and Means process. One thing to note is that members of the advisor committee were on my screening team and the interview team to hire the current that hired and offered the job to the current driver ed instructor in the state. I have one FTE to deal with all across the state, everything that's been involved. I've also sat in with the advisor committee multiple times and spent a couple hours with them one day doing a strengths and weaknesses exercise. What's good about the committee? What's bad about the committee? What would they want to fix? And it was split. There were people that voted yes, they wanted the safety division person as chair. And there were people that said no. All of them said we are far above where we used to be in relationship to teen driving. The year before the law went into effect, there were 1,200 16-year-olds behind the wheel when someone was killed or injured. 100 a month. That number is all the way down to 750. It's a 39% reduction. And as mentioned, we've had a national study who looked at Oregon and said not only was that a 39% reduction when there's 16-year-olds behind the wheel and they're killed or injured, the 17-year-olds, the 18-year-olds, and the 19-year-olds are all dropping too. And of those kids that took a driver education course, they're between 15 and 40% even better. We're on the right path. We're going the right way. There are people that disagree. Just as many in various programs that you hear about, and even within this building, there are disagreements on where to go, what the policy should be. That's part of what's taken so much time. And unfortunately, there are some that think because they've been heard, they get their way. And my staff person and I have taken the hits and taken the conflicts. Because that's not where for a state where we're trying to go, what we're trying to do, and trying to use the proven things that are out there to make a difference with our kids. I know there's an amendment, and I had different things going on. I was up in Portland for a Driving Under the Influence conference this morning, and only had a chance to look at the amendment just before the hearing. So I've got my written testimony there. The group that's there has done great work. It looks like majority of the bill is based on the committee that already exists and the responsibility. I do think it's in a bit overkill to talk about doing a governor-appointed committee for a set of responsibilities that are already there and listed in this group being worked on. But understand, they don't agree, and they won't agree if they're governor-appointed as well. And Mr. Chair, I'd be more than happy to try and answer any of the questions that I can. I tried to keep it short for you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clearly, there is a problem. The problem may not be with the curriculum. The problem may not be with the direction of safety among teen drivers. But clearly, there's a problem just in terms of the dynamics around the existing functioning of the committee. What, if you don't like this bill, what would you recommend as changes statutorily or administratively that would address the problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, point out one thing and then answer to your question. As mentioned, I bring the policy operation piece and anything dealing with the administrative rule to the Oregon Traffic Safety Committee. Putting this committee in rule, which is short of being governor-appointed in statute, brought that to the committee, and the Traffic Safety Committee, they voted that down. It said, no, don't put it in rule. We don't want something that's there. They viewed it more as a group that's going to sunset soon. I have a chart. These are, and can hand these over. Thank you. The safety office runs with a tremendous amount of citizen involvement all over the place. Law enforcement, judicial programs, DUI motorcycle, as well as driver education. What needs to happen is, I think my staff person steps off as being chair. We'll see if someone within the current nine members that are there raises their hand and gets enough support of a majority of the group to step in as chair. And I think we stay the course. There's nothing wrong with disagreement. If everybody is in agreement and there aren't things that are being an issue, that says that what has been in this state for the last 30 years is okay. And it isn't. There hasn't been support. There hasn't been any change or check or audit about where we're going and what we're teaching our kids. And you know, maybe one of the things is that the advisory committee says we're trying to be too aggressive. But I can turn around and show you what's happened with the national support saying that, or the national study saying that where we're heading is making a huge difference, more than what was expected. What needs to happen is that the individuals from all the different areas of the state and the different ways of operating the program need to continue to be involved to raise their issues, to have solutions, not complaints. And that's one of the hard things, is that there's been a long list of complaints. We've talked about what do we do instead. We don't know. We just don't like that.
Thank you. Representative Byer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Troy, for being so patient with me on this issue. I guess one of the other issues that was brought up to me and I mentioned is the curriculum, and I know we've come a long way, but if I were to ask you, if we had an adopted curriculum, would you be able to hand it over to me?
Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chair, can I ask, curriculum for the child or curriculum for those teaching, learning how to teach the driver training program?
Both.
Okay. Ms. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, to hand you a curriculum about what it is that we are having the 600 or so adults that teach children around the state go through to learn the dynamics of driver training, which, again, has not been any in the state for a long time. Yes, I can hand that to you. Yes, it will be daunting. It will be three notebooks, not one. Be three notebooks, one for classroom, one for behind the wheel, and one for foundations that goes all the way across the board. In Oregon, the amount of time to go through that is approximately 90 to 100 hours. The majority of that is the behind the wheel, just because you can't teach in a group in a car. It takes longer because you've got a smaller group. The national standard for teaching someone to do driver training through the National Association is 150 hours. We've organized the program and made it smaller and more direct to Oregon. Can I hand you a curriculum in relationship to what needs to be delivered to the student? No, because that's not where the rules are, because that's where there's a lot of disagreement about, you know, in some areas of the state, you need to be talking about the hearing and bend and studded tires and ice and things like that, freeways versus county roads. There are different dynamics all over the state. So the front line, what's being taught to the student, needs to be able to be flexed and be different. And we don't have a state curriculum, and I'm not an advocate of one state curriculum like the Washington state has. They've got a set of binders that's what's to be delivered to the student. Every time they change something, they've got to send out 700 copies and overheads and new PowerPoint every time they change a slide. I don't want to go there. I would rather set the framework to say, here's the minimums that need to be in there. Make sure you cover them, but deliver it in a format and a structure that makes sense for what you need to do locally, whether you're a community college, high school, a private company, or an educational service district. I don't want to go to one statewide student-level curriculum, and that's a debate I have with my program manager. He does want to go there, and I'm saying no. And so that's an in-house debate we have with frequency.
And follow up. Yes. Thank you. The curriculum that you have, has it remained consistent for the teachers? I mean, as they're learning, what they were taught last year, is it the same that they're being taught this year in how to teach? Or are they having to constantly change their...
Ms. Chair? And Madam Vice Chair, it is not the same. It has evolved, but it has come at the advice of those master trainers, as well as my program manager, is to say, how can we deliver this better? How can we get better? Because the first, when we first took the 150 and made it to be 100 or less hours, how that was delivered, and having the first set of people, the first set of master trainers go out there to help teach, we're all new at it because it had not been done for so long. And the individuals have gotten better, and the curriculum has gotten better. There has been too much change, and I have admitted to that. It had said we're not doing any more changing. We're halting it. No matter what good idea comes down the road, no matter what the Transportation Research Board says or the National Transportation Safety Board says, because they're supposed to release a report soon, we leave ours alone for a while, because too much change means you're leaving some people behind, and you're also causing confusion. I've had three different staff people in this program in 5 years. The first two left because of the complaints and that they felt they were a target and didn't want to be involved in it. The guy that's working for me now lives in Spokane, and he commutes vice versa with his wife every other weekend because he loves the program, loves the kids, wants to make a difference. There wasn't anybody else anywhere near his caliber when we did the interviews 2.5 years ago for this job. We're extremely fortunate to have him here doing this work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Troy.
Thank you. Any further questions? Troy, thank you very much. Appreciate all the information. Anyone else to testify on 3384? Close the hearing on 3384 and reopen a hearing on 3261. We have one individual here.
My name is John Benson, and I'm actually the sponsor of this particular bill. And basically what it involves is, I believe you already know, if you receive a ticket for no insurance, for whatever reason, you just pay the fine. Would you like copies of this? I made this kind of quick so it'll be easy to follow. This is a simplified version, but anyway, you receive a ticket for no insurance. For whatever reason, you just pay the fine. An example is if you're leaving for the Far East for several months on your job, you don't have time to go to court, so you pay the fine. You had insurance at the time of the citation, but no card on your person when you were cited. When you get back to Oregon, you find that you now have to pay a very high-risk insurance, double or more than what you currently pay, for 3 years with no vehicle in place to have the SR-22 requirement dropped from your driving record. This requirement to have it dropped, if you have insurance to start with, and you can show it to DMV, they should be required to drop the SR-22 because that's what the ticket was for in the first place. This bill also needs to be retroactive because the SR-22 form goes for 3 years. So someone that was caught up in this 3 years ago would then have the same justice meted to them as someone who would be cited after this bill is passed. How many people have been caught up in this net? How would you like to be sitting in jail for several years with no recourse while your partner in crime is set free and does not have to go to court because the law was repealed before he had to go to court? DMV is going to tell you that it would cost too much or that it would be an inconvenience to make it retroactive. You were represented to be a referee to the people in your district. You were not elected to control the people who elected you. Saddam claimed 98% of the vote in Iraq for president, but he certainly did not represent it. Notification does not have to be a mass mailing. It can be done through the media, normal DMV correspondence, at DMV, through the police if they stop you, the courts, or whatever, and it would eventually get the word out. Laws are passed all of the time without a direct mailing. Okay? In my particular case, I was cited for not having proof of insurance. I had a Xerox card, the officer, whatever reason, wouldn't accept it. And instead of going to court, I went to the court clerk And the court clerk told me that, okay, we can dismiss it, but you'll still have to pay the fine. I didn't have any money on me. I said, forget it. I'll just mail it in, which is what I did. So I did not plead guilty. I just mailed the fine in. The court, in turn, notified DMV that I didn't have vehicle liability insurance. They sent me a letter that said if I didn't have it by September 9th or 20th or something, that it would be suspended. And so I called DMV and asked them, hey, I have insurance. I can furnish it. They said, if you can furnish proof, we'll drop the requirement. So I sent them proof by registered mail, which is actually an envelope from my truck, and Senator Crump has a copy of it. And I mailed it in and forgot about it. I was stopped in January for a license plate light being out. I now have a driving while suspended charge against me for failure to file an SR-22 form. I now have retained an attorney for $1,000, and we're trying to unravel it now through the course to get it vacated. And then I find out, while I'm in Senator Courtney's office, that there were some DMV people that were coming through and overheard our conversation and said, we hate to tell you this, but you weren't talking to DMV. You were talking to an inmate at Coffee Creek Correctional Institute. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with inmates answering the phone as long as I get correct information. In this case, I followed the instructions I was given. I Xeroxed the stuff off. I mailed it in, return receipt requested, end of story. So now I'm sitting here with a driving while suspended. I've got no way to go through Oregon DMV and have it drop from my record, even though I've been with the same company for over 5 years. It's a preferred company, by the way. That company also does not file SR-22 forms. If you want SR-22 insurance, according to them, which Jeff also has a copy of that, you have to go find another insurance, a high-risk company, okay? Which means that I have to drop it, go pay double my insurance, or if I elect to keep that insurance through the 3 years because they have some other policies in mind, then I'm paying triple insurance for nothing. And this is plain stupid. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Don. Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Close the public hearing on 3261. And anything else to come before the committee? Patrick?
I think I dropped amendments for House Bill 2840 at your offices yesterday. Those will be that's up for a work session on Monday.
Right. And we finally agree with the amendments.
Sort of. Oh, the school zone speed zones.
Yeah, school speed zones. Have a great weekend.
25 miles an hour.